Well, that's a kind of a scary picture when you think about it for a minute. What God do we worship? Well, most of us, I think, would say, well, I don't worship those kind of gods. And we'd be right. We don't fall down before Baal. We don't fall down before Diana of the Ephesians. But whether we choose to worship that God or we choose to worship something else, very few of us are atheists. The atheist really is a person who says in his heart, God doesn't see. I'll never be called into account because of what I do. Most of us serve not those gods that we had in the picture, but we've explained before, most of us have an evaluator in our lives to which we give answer. And that evaluator becomes our God. You know, when Joshua said, choose you this day whom you will serve, in Joshua the 24th chapter, verse 16, he was telling the people of God as they were coming out of Egypt that they now had a choice. And the choice is which God we're going to serve. Not whether we'll serve a God, but whether we'll serve Jehovah God. Well, I ran across a lot of research as I was thinking about these things. And an organization called Lifeway Research, which is basically an organization that specializes in research on Baptist churches, had this finding in a report that they gave of their research. Now, I realize that they're looking at Baptist churches, but I think in many ways you'd have to say that the same thing is probably true of us. Even in churches, the things that we've talked about, money and power, or money and prestige, and this week we're going to talk about power. Even within churches, these things hold a powerful sway. This is the way that they said it. It's easy to think that those in Christian churches, and that's the way they would describe Baptist churches, have chosen their God and are faithful to Him. However, pastors, that's what they call preachers, quickly acknowledge how divided their congregation's allegiances can be. The gods that we're talking about don't have a physical shrine, but this is the important thing, they compete for the heart of Christians. Well, more than half, this is a broad statement that comes from their research, not just looking at Baptist churches, but looking at churches across the board. More than half of U.S. Protestant pastors believe that comfort, control, or security, approval, are idols that have a significant influence on their congregation. Nearly 2 in 5. That would be 40% if you're counting. Nearly 2 in 5 say political power is an idol their congregations face. So let's think about being evaluated by the power God. The power God, in fact, isn't real. It's just a fake. It's self-centered. I think all of us know that from our own experience. You know, Jesus had real power. That's undoubted. But Jesus' real power was exhibited in his service for others. We'll just notice a couple of discussions Jesus and what real power looks like, John the 10th chapter. And I want you to notice what happened here in John 10 at verse 18. It's important to understand that real power, what Jesus had, is exhibited in the way that we serve other people. Jesus is making a statement about his upcoming death. He says, "No man takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own accord." That's real power. He says, "I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority, power, to take it up again. This charge I've received from my Father." This is, when we talk about the power that Jesus had, we're not talking about fake power. This is real power. Acts the 10th chapter, and at verse 38. Again, this statement is made, and it in many ways is a comparison between real power and fake power. Acts 10 at verse 38. Peter, of course, is talking with the Jews about his converting Gentiles. Now, they didn't like that. But this is what Peter says, that God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Spirit and with power. He says, he went about doing good, healing all who were oppressed by the devil, for God was with him. 1 Corinthians, the 4th chapter. And here in 1 Corinthians 4 at verse 19. This is the description and in some ways the comparison that we've been talking about. The Apostle Paul tells the Corinthians, "I will come to you soon if the Lord wills. And I'll find out not the talk of arrogant people, but their power." The difference between people that talk a big game and people that do something. 1 Corinthians, the 7th chapter. The apostle talks about in 1 Corinthians 7 the relationship between husbands and wives. And he makes it clear that husbands have power over their wives. But look at how he describes it. It's a power that's exerted for the purpose of service. I'm not the head of my house, so that everyone gives it within my house gives me obeisance. I'm the head of my house because I have to provide for them. That's an awesome responsibility. In Luke, the 22nd chapter, at verse 53, it's a record of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane shortly before he's crucified. He's been praying, and the Romans and the Jews send a contingent of soldiers out to take him. And Jesus basically surrendered to them. And he said, "Be aware, this is their day. They get to look like they have power today." Well, they took him before Pilate. And when Jesus stood before Pilate, he said, "You wouldn't have any power unless my God had given it to you. I have power. I will lay down my life. You think you're going to take it, but I will lay it down. You know, when Simon the sorcerer saw what was real power, when he saw what really happened when somebody exercised the power that God gives, because he was well versed in fake power, he tried to buy the gift. Acts the 8th chapter, verse 19. He didn't really understand what real power is. But he wanted to. He knew the world that he'd lived in all that time, and he wanted to buy it. Romans the 9th chapter at verse 11. As the Apostle Paul talks about God, he compares him to a potter. The potter who has the power to make a vessel. The clay has really no power in the hands of the potter. Fake power, even though a lot of people want to be gauged, want to be evaluated on the basis of fake power doesn't really exist. People want to have it. And sometimes we get all impressed with the power that the governor has. And we get all impressed with the power that the president has. And we get all impressed with the power that exists in the government. You know, it sometimes turns out that people who want to have power, in a political sense, start out wanting to do good for other people, but pretty soon it turns into lie, cheat, steal, do anything you can to hang on to this power that you have found. Kim used to work for city government. If you've ever worked in city government, you know that that's the case. She commented that people would come into a position wanting to serve, and then pretty soon they forgot that they came there wanting to serve, and they just wanted to have power. You see it in Acts the 19th chapter, beginning at verse 24. Look at what happens. The Apostle Paul comes into town. He starts talking about Jesus. And this is what the people who had power, who were willing to do anything that they could to keep their power, wanted to be gauged. A man named Demetrius, a silversmith, who made silver shrines of Artemis, brought no little business to the craftsmen. He gathered together with the workmen in similar trades. He said, "Men, you know that from this business we have our wealth." And you see and hear that not only in Ephesus, but almost all of Asia, this Paul has persuaded many and turned a great many people, saying, "The gods made with hands are not gods." There's a danger. Not only that this trade of ours may come into disrepute, but also that the temple of the great goddess Artemis may be counted as nothing, that she may even be dropped from her magnificence, she whom all Asia would worship. You do whatever you have to stay in power. You lie, you cheat, you steal. But you're evaluated not on the basis of what you have done. You're evaluated on whether you could hang on to power. Now, it's not just in government. We see it there. We lament it when we see it. But, you know, I think it's even worse when it exists in religious organizations. John, the 9th chapter, Jesus heals a man. His parents are called, and they said, "Who healed him?" You know what his parents did? They said, "We don't know." You know why they did that? Because if the people that were in power in the synagogue found out about what they said, they'd put them out. These people were more interested in hanging on to their power than they were in celebrating that this man had been healed. And they intimidated his parents. And they fell prey to that power. Demetrius, 3 John, the 1st chapter, Diotrephes, 1 John, the 1st chapter, 3 John, the 1st chapter. I'm having real trouble with this point. Diotrephes loved to have the preeminence among them. That was in the church. This wasn't in the synagogue. You know, sometimes we say, well, the Jews had a hard time understanding this, and the Jews wanted to hang on to power, and so they crucified Jesus because he questioned their power. Let me tell you, it exists even in the church. Diotrephes, who loved to have the preeminence among them, who wanted a position of power, was willing to put people out of the church so that he could maintain his position of power. Acts, the 20th chapter, at verse 30, the Apostle Paul reminds us, well, he was talking to the elders in Ephesus. And he says, even from among your own selves shall men arise, seeking to draw people away after them. Even in the eldership it can exist. Power and the abuse of power exists no matter where we go. And the power God insists that there's no responsibility that comes with power. In Jesus' temptation, Satan offered him power. Luke, the 4th chapter, verse 6. Now, Jesus was going to have power, but in order to have power, Jesus had to go to the cross. That was the responsible side of Jesus' power. You have to make the sacrifice. That's what gives you power. And Satan said, "No, just bow down and worship me. I'll give you the power." And he could. It was fake power, but he could give it to him. Oftentimes, power and wanting to be judged by the power of God masquerades as, well, we call it personal autonomy. You see people all the time saying, "It's my body, my choice. I must have the power to kill a baby." But you know what? That's not true. You do have the power to decide who you're going to have sex with, but you don't have the power to kill a baby. If you understood power, you would know that the power that a mother has is exercised not for herself, but is exercised for her baby. And I have a feeling that Satan is using this confusion. Satan is reveling in our ability to understand, or our inability to understand, the God of power. Well, how do I deal with this temptation to want to be judged by a power God? How do I deal with the inevitable change that takes place, or seemingly inevitable change that takes place? It really boils down to just one thing. Control your thoughts. Value other people more highly than you value yourself when you are in a position of power responsibility. That's what the Apostle Paul said to the Philippians in Philippians 2:3. Esteem other better than himself. Imitate Jesus and his concern for others over his concern for himself. Jesus had power, real power, not fake power. Jesus had real power, and he used it to serve other people. Husbands have power, and they use it to serve their family. Women have power, and they use it to nurture their children. Choose well. Don't give in to this power God. Don't let the confusion that Satan stirs up dissuade you from serving God. When John was in heaven in a vision, he was shown some marvelous things. And John got a little confused. The angel that was showing him these things evidently had way more power than John did. And John thought, I need to worship that. And the angel said, worship Jehovah. That's where it really all is. That's Revelation, the 19th chapter. You want to be evaluated by God? You want to be evaluated by Jesus? Do you want to be evaluated by Jehovah, the real God, the real possessor of power? Give yourself to him. Don't be evaluated by the power of God. Put Jesus on in baptism. You'll become a part of him, part of his family, part of his body. He will be your head. He'll wash away your sin. We want to give you the opportunity to do that. And we want you to think about it all week, but this is a time when you can let somebody know that we can help.